You're listening to Around Comics, watching before Watchmen, Rorschach, number one. Something to talk about before we, like, as a lead-in to the episode.
What can we talk about? Let me tell you something about it. I can't believe you're eating ice cream this late, number one.
Hey, you don't have to bust me out.
I'm live. Calling you out, man.
That's my biggest problem.
That's the one problem. That's it.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
That's what my mother does, that, and she's dealing with the
same
shit.
Don't start giving me...
You need a drill sergeant. That's what I'm... You just need a drill sergeant.
Pick any athletic activity you want, and I will beat your ass in it tomorrow.
Hey, don't give me the
so,
jump.
Well, it's true. It's...
Doing flips down the stage crap. Whatever. I mean, your heart is...
Hey, my cardio is fantastic. What are you talking about? My heart, my cholesterol is low. My blood pressure is like 62 standing. What are you talking about? Trust me.
Go get some more ice cream. Man.
I can have ice cream once in a while. What's the problem with that?
Enjoy yourself.
I did. I enjoyed it very much so. Don't, you know.
I bet it was a humongous bowl.
It was a pretty big bowl. I won't lie.
It was a popcorn bowl.
No, it wasn't that big. No, it wasn't that. All right, enough of that ice cream talk. You're listening to Around Comics. Thanks for tuning in once again. This is Watching Before Watchmen, Rorschach number one. Yeah. I am Sal.
Jerry.
What?
I'm Ben, and this is Jerry.
Just
ice cream talk with Ben and Jerry.
It's ice cream talk. I wanted to do a podcast called Sundays with Billy Sunday. And it was a guy that would just go around, like, you know, like Guy Fieri. Just running around going to different, like, ice cream shops around the country or maybe the world. And it would be Sundays with Billy, and his name would be Billy Sunday.
I think you'll find that you would be eating a lot of Mayfield's ice cream. Because every one I go in, that's all they have is just a bunch of
Mayfield's
tubs.
Well, yeah, but that would be the key. Like, you'd have to go out and find the good places. Yeah, the places that are making. Like, I went to a place... over in in Oak Park, which is a pretty well-known little suburb of Chicago. Frank Lloyd Wright lived in Oak Park at one time, and
real artsy.
Yeah, it's just a cool little town. But there's an old Italian ice place there that, you know, makes like handmade Italian ice. Gina's over on Roosevelt Road makes handmade Italian ice. You gotta find places like that, man. Come on.
And, I can't think. The only thing that I can think of is the occasional gelato joint, and now yogurt places. But you know, those are so commercial; they're not really.
You got it. Well, that's why the show would be important, because then it would, you know, like it.
What's
would,
the name it again?
Find, it's called Sundays with Billy Sunday.
You right. Ice cream aficionado.
I love ice cream. I do love ice cream. All right, but enough ice cream talk.
Enough.
God damn it. Back to the episode at hand. Watching Before Watchmen, this is Rorschach number one. If you are not familiar with us, or with Watching Before Watchmen, or with the Around Comics podcast, basically what we're doing here is we are going through each and every single issue of the Watching Before Watchmen mega super event from DC Comics. We're going through them page by page, kind of, and kind of just, you know, going and reviewing and discussing each individual issue to see if any of them are any damn good whatsoever. This is the second set of miniseries this Rorschach and Dr. Manhattan being sort of the second wave. So this is the number one of Rorschach, written by Brian Azzarello, with art by Lee Bermejo, colors by Barbara Ciardo.
Ciardo.
Letters by Rob Lee, and covers by Bermejo and Jim Steranko.
Where? What?
You didn't see the Steranko?
What? Where?
You didn't see the Steranko cover? Seriously?
No, I didn't, and I'm scared as shit to try to look for it now.
Oh,
my computer
wow.
all frizzing out.
Well, you'll have to look for it later. It's pretty interesting cover. It was red, and it had it was different. It was very, very different, but it was I was surprised when I saw the name Steranko. I mean, it doesn't... I don't know if... I think it looks very Steranko. Like, if you think of Steranko, like, you would... Like, you wouldn't look at this and think that's Jim Steranko. It's a different...
Really?
Yeah, to me, it's a little different, but...
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. It's, yeah, you'll have to check it out. One of the more interesting covers I felt from this whole Before Watchmen.
Endeavor.
Yeah. Disaster. No, it's not a disaster.
Not a bit.
Yeah, super event. I wish Jim Lee would stop drawing covers for this, because I think... His are easily the worst of the alternate covers.
Because he has his own corner in the comic verse, you know?
Well, I just don't think he fits
right.
this. Yeah, it just doesn't... To me, it doesn't work. Well, you haven't seen it yet, but I had seen his Dr. Manhattan cover. It is god-awful bad. It's just terrible, terrible, terrible.
Is that just because of his style?
Yeah, it's just his style. It just doesn't work. It just I don't know. I don't like it. I don't care. I mean, not that he's not a good artist. He is. And it works for certain things. I'm just a little tired of Jim Lee's art all over the damn place. Like, there's other artists out there, and I think there are better artists out there than him. So I just, you know, I'd rather see something else. But for this project, I think it doesn't work at all. But anyway... So, before we get into it too much further, a couple of things. One, I would like to say that we are going to spoil this book. If you haven't read it, you might want to go read it before you're listening. Or if you don't care, then just go ahead and listen. And two, this episode is sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service.
Citizens of Earth, listen carefully to my words. The words of greatness, the words of doom. I am the supreme ruler of the sovereign nation of Latveria. Here, my people need not your foolish children's books for entertainment. Comic books filled with moronic tales of spandex-clad heroes. I would never allow their minds to be polluted with such drivel. But if I did, I would suggest, nay, I would command they patronize this discount comic book service. How idiotic this company must be to offer such low prices. 35% to 75% off? The fools! They insult Doom with their utter lack of business acumen. 50% off hardcovers and DC's new 52 titles? Marvel Now pre-orders up to 75% off? You make it all too easy, DCB service. Even a dolt like Reed Richards and his band of misfits could defeat the likes of you. Go now, you cretins, I command you. Save your pennies, and fill your minds with tales of fantasy and heroes. It will only soften them, and make it that much easier for Doom to enslave mankind, and take his rightful place as ruler of the world!
Alright, Discount Comic Book Services, or service.com, please go there, buy your books from there. They're good people, good company, and they help make sure that this show keeps going on.
And they help children.
And they do?
Yes, they
do. I don't think that's confirmed.
Well, it's a rumor. I'm happy to spread it.
That's not a bad one. Let's get into the issue at hand, which is Rorschach.
Rorschach number one. Easily the most anticipated title of the whole series, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
You feel
Rorschach, man. Okay. He's like...
Why, you know, that's an interesting
Batman
thing.
Batman of the Watchmen universe.
Well, I suppose so. I mean, to me, Rorschach is always more of the question than Batman, necessarily, but...
Well, you know what I'm saying. He's the wolf. He's the draw.
Yeah, it's always been interesting to me how much he was popularized, or how popular he became from Watchmen. You know, he's the... easily the most over the top of any of the characters. He's the most disturbed, we certainly find out. He is probably the least redeemable, but that's, I think, part of his attraction to people, too, is that he had a set of principles and a code, as crazy as they may have been in some ways, that he lived by, and he stood by them till the very end, to the bitter end.
Yeah.
And I think that's something of why people really like Rorschach. And
you can almost find some sort of redeeming quality to him, in, you know, against all of the other flawed characters. You know, as flawed as he was,
I suppose
you still knew where he stood. You know, you knew that he wasn't. He didn't have some crazy, you know, secret going on. I mean, he's.
Right. Well, you knew what he was, and you knew what. Yeah. He was out front. You know, easily. His opinions were right there, and that. But it always just made me sort of a little hesitant with people that found his character so likable. You know, like I mean, if you really look at who he was, he's a pretty.
Well, yeah, that goes hand in hand with all, you know, you see people wearing the Evil Ernie t-shirts or crazy
stuff.
Right,
but stuff.
That's,
but
got,
that
I
think is a different, like, to me, that's a different, like, you know, I can understand, like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna wear a Freddy t-shirt, or I'm gonna get, you know, like, I got a guy I work with who's a big Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th movies. Like he loves that those movies, and he loves that character, and he's just
see. I
like,
can't get with that. That's weird to me.
But I can almost understand in the sense of like almost like it's so over the top and ridiculous that there's, you know, there's no other reason to there's no believability there. You know what I mean? It's not like you're going. Yeah. I'm a huge Charles Manson fan, or I'm an Ed Gein fan. You know what I mean? Like people, you know, that would be bizarre. But like someone like Jason Voorhees is, I mean, that's a cartoon character.
Yeah, comparison. But it's just.
But Rorschach was, I don't know. It always just made me a little weird to think that people were really so attracted to him. I can understand to some degree, but also I thought it was a commentary on his fans to some degree too.
Mm. It could have been the way he was depicted or in The Watchmen. Maybe, you know, his character and its arc and everything. Maybe there was some attraction there. I know that the movie didn't do him any didn't hurt his appeal.
No. No, definitely the movie, I think. Well, and that was funny too, because I had friends that weren't comic book fans, that didn't read the book, that then went and saw the movie and walked away with it with the same, like, attraction to Rorschach.
Yeah, yeah, there's been lots of comments that whoever played him stole the show.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, it's just an interesting, you know, it's like, I don't, you know, does it sort of speak to our want to, you know, be tougher on crime, or our, you know, to be stronger-willed with society's evils. I don't know. It's interesting that even though he, you know, is a psychotic and deranged, homeless, you know, vigilante with severe psychological issues.
I think it's presentation. How he's presented. He almost it's the same things about that I like about Batman, you know, the way he comes on a scene or whatever, and he has a certain swagger or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, and I can
see. Well, and I can see that too, except that
that about Rorschach.
We saw underneath the mask, you know, like you see that, and I can understand initially it's like he, you know, he's cool looking character, it's a cool character design. He's he's different, and you know, he doesn't take any crap off anybody, and he, you know, is pretty tough and all that kind of thing. But then we find out who he is, and it's like, oh, you know, okay. But even still, all through that, in some ways, he comes off as, because of his principles, the most heroic in some ways, you know. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. Rorschach is a very interesting character to me. And I think, you know, if you go back and look at The Answer and, like, you know, who, you know, and, like, Ditko's Mr. A character, who is very hardline sort of conservative.
Hard-boiled.
Yeah. Well, not hard-boiled, hardline. I mean, like, you know, no... There is black and there is white, and there is nothing in between. You know, that kind of a thing is where I think Rorschach comes from, and I always felt like it was a commentary from Alan Moore on that type of a character, and almost like a, you know, I wonder if Moore was playing with us in some ways with Rorschach and going, I'm going to give you a character you're going to fall in love with because I know what comic book readers like. But then I'm going to make him, you know, I'm going to show you what kind of person that would actually be. Like, what, you know, if there was a guy that was as driven as Batman, he wouldn't be a billionaire, philanthropist, you know.
He'd be damaged
playboy.
Goods.
He'd be pretty messed up. Like, you'd have to be. And that, I think that was sort of the point, is that you'd have to be really screwed up to be that driven in what you're doing, you know, as a masked vigilante. So... sort of interesting. Okay. Anyway, but as, you know, I don't want to sidetrack too far. We haven't even gotten into this book, which is the before Rorschach, I guess we'll call it, before Watchmen. As the issue opens up, we see what looks to be a murder scene. There's a body of a woman on a, looks like a gurney, some sort of metal type gurney, medical kind of thing, and it looks like someone with a scalpel is carving letters into the body, and we pull back and we reveal that it says, I can't help myself, but neither can you, I don't need to, I can't help myself, I can't see myself, but neither can you. Which we could probably take to say that he's possibly trying...
giving a message to Rorschach, potentially?
Possibly. We don't know at this point. But it's we don't know who this is. He's got medical gloves on. There's a, you know, there's a sense of medical equipment and a medical scene to this sequence. But that's
and the woman looks like she may be a prostitute as well. So
how do you get that?
Well, she seems rather rather stacked, wouldn't you say?
Well, she could be a stripper. She could just be a woman with large breasts. I don't know. I don't know. That seems like a leap that she's a prostitute. She has large boobs.
Hey, look, man. I was in the South. All women with, we were told to steer clear from women with large boobs. They were probably women of the night.
Have I made it clear to you that you may be the worst private detective I've ever met? I've only met.
How we were raised, man.
All right. Anyway, well, we don't know.
It turns out to be that
though. She may be a prostitute. They usually that ends up being the case with.
They're accessible. Let's just say that.
They ask for the serial killers. Then we jump to a large, full page scene of New York City at night. Lights are shining, and we see the familiar sort of typewriter facade of Rorschach's journal,
and his narration starts.
His narration, yeah, his narration box, the typewriter type, what do you call it? I can't think of the word. Typeset, I guess. And
his journal.
It's this. Beginning sequence of him narrating as we see the city of New York, and this is 1977, July 1st, 1977, we find out, and it's a very kind of taxi driver sort of montage of of him narrating about the city and how much he hates it and the horrible people that occupy the city as we see some of the denizens of New York's Times Square and dark
alleyways. Very typical of Rorschach.
Yes.
And his outlook on society. Do you have anything else to say about this page? The city?
The big full page shot?
Yeah, look at it. Look at it really close.
I'm looking. I don't...
The clouds and... You don't see
Rorschach. Oh, yeah, okay. I guess you see, yeah, it's sort of Rorschach's face in the clouds. I got you. The dark and light.
Well, the thing of it is, I didn't know this until I was listening to your boys, iFanboy.
Uh-huh.
And they had made, they saw this. I didn't see it when I read through, but it is kind of, it's real subtle. It's not anything real definite.
Yeah, either. I don't know, maybe. That could be...
It even calls it into question whether it is or whether it isn't. But there is some kind of symmetry with the clouds on
there
either
is.
Side.
Yeah.
And it's just enough of a... I mean, it's perfect, man. You know,
it's possibly there. It's possibly we're imagining it. Because, I don't know.
If it had been any more definite, then it would have... To me, it would have lost the effect.
Yeah, I can definitely see it there, but after you've said something. So, yeah, I don't know. We don't know for sure, but it definitely looks like there's the clouds sort of make up Rorschach's face looking over the city. So kind of a cool effect, although one that I didn't see. So, kind of wasted on me. But as we go along, we see Rorschach, like I said, Rorschach sort of going, narrating through the city, and we're following a couple of people, one person being, now these are prostitutes, I'm assuming, but I guess that's still an assumption. They could just be go-go dancers or something like that, but they do have large breasts and they're scantily dressed.
Well, the next page, you that's not a prostitute. Look at the first panel, please. Dude's pulling up his pants.
Yeah, I don't like to make it.
She's wiping her mouth.
She's wiping her chin with a handful of cash.
Draw a picture and text it to you.
All right, fine. We see a prostitute.
Horrible.
She finishes the John, takes a wad of cash to a dealer, buys some drugs of some sort, and then we see the dealer. Now this next sequence, this next page, I was a little confused. The dealer ends up in a
house of iniquity.
Well, it's a
one of
those adult, shady
things.
Like an adult movie booth where you go in and rent a little tiny room and you get adult movies and do your business in there. But I was a little confused because the opening scene, his pants are down, he's watching a movie, but then it appears as if he is tying his arm off.
Well, he's shooting up. He's doing a little double.
He's multitasking.
Yeah,
here,
he's doing a little double the pleasure.
He's
a little trying to time the highs at the right.
I get. Yeah, that seems really strange to me. Like he's like at one point do you go, okay, I'm,
that guy's there to party, man.
Yeah, man. That's something else. I'm gonna go
we
masturbate.
Got White. We got. Pornos,
and let me tell all of you would be drug dealers out there, you don't get high on your own stash. That's rule number one, and especially in a jerk off house. That's
you need your you need your wits about you.
Yeah, you'd never see the guys on the wire doing this. Like
no.
You never see the corner boys on the wire doing this kind of business. But anyway, this masturbating junkie dealer.
It's a seedy ass scene, is it not? I mean, really.
Well, absolutely. It is very seedy, but it also just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, I don't know. Anyway, he's in there. He's apparently masturbating and getting ready to shoot up.
It just doubles the creep factor. I mean, it's one thing if he finds a quiet place to shoot up, but no. Azzarello.
I can even understand him going in there to shoot up because it's like a private room that's very cheap. You don't, it's like you don't have to rent a hotel room. But to go in there and take your pants down and start doing your business.
He's got to take his pants all the way down, is what I want to do. Sitting in that seat?
Yeah, right.
His bare ass sitting in the seat?
His bare ass on that seat. And then he's tying off. It just seems too much to me. This guy deserves a beating. And that's exactly what he gets, because before we know it, Rorschach kicks in the door, starts beating this guy up and twisting his arm, breaks his arm, and wants information on his supply, where he's getting his drugs from. And eventually the guy gives it up because he threatens to start working on his back if he doesn't.
Yeah, I assume Rorschach was following the transactions or whatever, and he knows that this guy's a dealer,
is he a pimp? No, you keep calling everybody a pimp. This guy had no business with the woman except she bought drugs off of him.
Oh, everybody's a pimp, man.
Everybody's not a pimp. I don't think he's a pimp. I think he's just a drug dealer. She went and bought some drugs.
But I think we'll see the pimp in a moment. There is a pimp in here.
Possibly. All right. Rorschach gets the info he needs and takes off. And the guy tells him that he gets it in the sewers close by Times Square, that he's able to get resupplied pretty quickly. He works Times Square, and whenever he's out, he gets his re-up, as they call it on the streets. really quick, so Rorschach starts searching around the sewers under New York, which I'm sure are a lovely place. And soon enough, he finds a couple of guys playing dice. You know, they're wearing like cut-off jean vests and bandanas, so they're playing dice, so they must be evil, horrible guys.
Yeah.
And he takes them out, and then before he knows it, he's ambushed. He's bushwhacked by a bunch of dudes that come charging out of the place and kick the living daylights out of him. And then we're introduced to the big boss.
Does he say his name? He says his name's Crime, but...
He does not...
he doesn't say his name, does he?
No, he just says, I'm Crime.
He looks like hell, and I love this character. He looks like he walked off of...
Saturday Night Fever?
Well, that and Jason Aaron scalped. There was a group of criminals in that series, and he looks just like one of those burnt up, crispy critters.
Yeah, he's a big guy. He's wearing like a white suit from straight out of the 70s, but then his face is all scarred and mangled up and anything. And we find out that he set up this plan to get Rorschach, because evidently Rorschach's been... messing with his business, so he set up this little trap to get Rorschach, and they then beat the daylights out of him, and they assume that they've killed him because they beat him so badly and leave him for dead. Which, you know, to me is, if
I thought it would have been a bit more brutal if they're going to kill somebody other than severe beating.
Yeah, that did seem like a little bit of a hole there. It's like you set up this whole sort of sting to get the guy, and then you don't make sure he's dead. Like, you don't, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought they would have, you know, put a bullet in his dome or something. Yeah. And they didn't want to pull the mask off. I think the leader had expressed that, you know, leave it on so that when they find the body, you know...
They know who he is. Which makes sense. I mean, you know, he's trying to send a message, so what's the point of just, like, them... If somebody just finds a body in the sewer, the message is wasted. But if they find Rorschach in the sewer, then they, you know, then... Rorschach's gone. Moving on, we then... move to above ground, and some police officers finding the dead body that we saw in the beginning of the book, dumped in a garbage can.
Dumpster.
A dumpster. You're correct. Still not sure if she's a prostitute or not, but so the cops find that, and then we move back to our.
You see who the cops are, right? The two detectives.
Oh, yeah. You know what? God, I did not pay attention to this at all. Yeah, you're absolutely right on this. It's the two detectives from the beginning of Watchmen, which would have happened years later, or years after this. But, yeah, that is absolutely right. I did not pay... Obviously, I didn't pay that much attention to this book.
Man.
Well, you know, it happens.
Smashing some ice cream and not really paying attention to...
Watching baseball. Moving along, we get to... Well, that's why you're here. At least, you know, one of us has to pay attention. The other one doesn't have to. It's your week. Moving along, we get back to our hoodlums, the crime lord guy. And now they're driving in a sweet caddy.
Man, I love that whole page. The first page with all the cars and the Cadillac. That is... it just feels like the 1970s.
It definitely does. Yeah, it feels like it's pulled right out of a Scorsese movie. And yeah, these guys are celebrating their victory. They believe that the town belongs to them now. And then we see Rorschach crawling out of a sewer cap, opening a sewer cap and crawling out of the sewers. And he goes to a drugstore close by, and one we've seen before, or we would see in the future. He apparently has a key to get in. Probably, you know, he made a key at one point. He goes in, takes some drugs, you know, assuming, you know, what do you think? Some painkillers, a little penicillin, maybe.
What would they take in the 70s?
Penicillin, I would say. Probably some methamphetamines. I don't know. Some codeine. Codeine was probably,
He's pulling a Jason Bourne, though.
Yeah, busting in there.
Yeah, and get in there and medicate himself and fix himself up.
Yeah, and then we move to the next day, and we're at the Gunga Diner, which is interesting. Really, this has been the only evidence that connects this universe to the regular Watchmen universe. We haven't really seen anything. You know, this looks much more like our New York and from the 70s than anything we saw in the Watchmen. But the Gunga Diner certainly is something, if you read Watchmen, you'd be familiar with. And Rorschach comes in now just as Kovacs. Stanley Kovacs?
Walter.
Walter, thank you. Walter Kovacs. And the people in the diner seem to know who he is and are shocked to see his appearance because he's all beaten up and bloodied still.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, they don't think he looks all that good, and he tells them that he was mugged, and they're surprised. Why would anybody mug a homeless dude like him? And he tells them that they made a mistake, that they didn't kill him. So, you know, Rorschach will have his revenge, we're assuming. And that's it. That's the end of the issue. It's... you know, not a whole lot here dealing with... I mean, this is a pretty superficial story. You know what I mean? Like, this is just a... This is Rorschach. It's 1977, New York, and he's trying to clean up the streets. You know, there's not a whole lot of deeper meaning here that
there's
I saw.
There's not a lot of overly devised back matter into Walter Kovacs' history.
Yeah, it's just a straight up story, and I think it was pretty good. It was, you know, entertaining. It looked good. I'm not that big of a Lee Bermejo.
I'm gonna tell you something.
Yes,
I love this art. I absolutely think it was a success. I think he was. I don't know if it was intentional because I looked at some of his other art this is the only thing I've ever read that he's illustrated, and his other art looks like this. So I don't know if it was.
It's different. This is. I'm like I said. I'm not that big a fan of his. It's just not a style that I care for all that much. But this I feel is a little different. There's something different to this.
Well, I don't know if that's because of him or because of Barbara Ciardo,
the colorist.
Yes.
Possibly.
I don't know who brought that 1970s funk this issue, but it is definitely here.
The colors definitely help with it. The colors certainly add to that, you know, era, the feeling of that era. But I think his art as well, like, there's a little more of an illustrative feel to it in this than the, I think, a more painterly feel that he usually uses, which I liked. I thought it worked really well. And you know, going back to when this book was first announced, you know, my feeling was like, well, you know, why not just Rizzo? You know, Azzarello and Rizzo, you know, 100 Bullets, they did this amazing crime book. They work so well together. Why would you not have those two working on this book? But I think this worked really well. I think
I can't imagine. To me, the art outweighed the story. I mean, way outweighed the story for me. I mean, the story is just, I mean, this is basically one of Rorschach's cases. It's just one of his cases. There's nothing really, and that's perfect. That's just what I want to see from, especially Rorschach, you know, as one of my favorite characters. And this is just basically, you know, some empty look at him in action stuff with, yeah, there's, I'm not a huge Tom Waits fan, but he's got an album, The Heart of Saturday Night, 1974. And the album cover was illustrated by this artist named Lynn Lascario.
Okay.
And if you look at that album cover, it looks just like the art in this.
Really?
And I don't know why, but both of them just have that not only 1970s feel, but...
What's the name of the album again?
The Heart of Saturday Night.
Okay.
I think that's it. It might be in The Heart of Saturday Night.
Well, I know how good your memory of...
Yeah, really.
...music is, because you had me on a goose chase.
Oh, my God. We got to straighten that rhetoric out. I can't believe you played the Supremes.
Well, that's the only Heat Wave I can think of off of you. When you're talking about a song called Heat Wave... There's
the
either
week,
that.
Everybody's thinking I'm a huge Heat Wave by Supremes fan. Anyway, where were we? What were we talking about? Tom Waits.
Tom Waits.
You know, they look alike. They look similar. And I tried to even go online to see if, you know, is there some kind of illustration theme from the 1970s that this looks like. Why do I think this looks like the 70s so much? And I really couldn't find anything other than that one album cover that it kind of looks like, you know. But I don't know if that's the colorist so much or if it's Lee Bermejo. But either way, I mean, it just really... It looks and feels like not only the 1970s, but New York. I mean, I felt like I was walking around with Billy Joel, you know, in the streets with some bell bottoms in my down to our belly button, you know.
Right. No, I agree. I think it definitely had the feel. It definitely looked like New York in the 70s. Well. I shouldn't say that. I have no idea what New York really looked like in the 70s.
You've seen 70s movies. You know what New
York... Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. My only actual knowledge of New York in the 70s is from film.
Yeah.
You know, that's not necessarily a truthful depiction of what New York was like in the 70s. So, I think, you know, he definitely keyed on some things that made it... You know, one is the fashion. I mean, obviously the fashion.
And, you know, that's the easiest. It really is. If you're going to illustrate a book that takes place in the 70s or some era, especially the 70s, I mean, the fashion's the easiest thing you can do.
Yeah.
Crazy, the hairstyles, the fashion, women's feathered hair. But I just think that they did something else. They found something else in this illustration. And I don't know why, but it really strikes me as the New York 1970s.
Well, the lighting and everything. I mean, I would not be surprised if you went and looked at the coloring and the lighting of this, and you compared it to films like, you know, Taxi Driver or
Warriors.
Yeah, Warriors or is it Heat of the Night? What's the one with not Tommy Lee Jones, the crazy fucker from Bad Lieutenant?
Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel, is it Heat? Not Heat of the Night. What is that? It's a one of Scorsese film. I can't think of the name of it.
Well, he was in Taxi Driver.
No, yeah, but this was, I believe, before that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But those types of films, those 70s New York, I mean, I think you would see a lot of similarities, especially, you know, when you're looking at the city itself, the lighting especially. I think the feeling of that, you know, I mean, if you just kind of look at it, you know, the initial scene we see is Times, you know, is sort of Times Square, the dirty, you know, porn theaters and all that from Times Square. And then you have, this very 70s yellow checker cab. And then, you know, as you move on, it's, very much the fashion of it and everything. I mean, to be honest, it's like a lot of this is underground. You know, you're in the sewer, so, you know, I don't know how that's really...
Well, Rorschach even looks...
More 70s?
Well, no, but he, you know the thing that I was saying, the attraction of this character. They really caught that. Whatever it is that's cool about Rorschach, they're successfully throwing it at us. But you know, you got him standing on the guy, the drug pusher. You know how Rorschach stands. He's got that almost a Spider-Man-esque type stance or whatever. And then he's got these really cool... I mean, I can imagine him being as fun to draw as Batman. You know, he walks around with his hands in his pockets. I mean, he's got this really cool swagger about him.
Well, I mean, I
had the most fun. This story was the most simple compared to all the other ones that we're reading, and I had the most fun with this book than all of the other ones.
All right. Well, I thought it was good. I liked it a lot. I thought it looked really good. You know, and it was very simplistic, and you know, in what they, you know, what Azzarello gave us at this point, which to me is a little surprising. Azzarello is not, I would not consider him a simplistic storyteller. Most of his stuff is far from that. It's generally very layered and
well, he's only got 4 issues.
Yeah, so maybe he's keeping it pretty simple for this. And you know, with Rorschach, it may just be the idea of, you know, it's almost binary. You know, it's a very simplistic sort of, you know, black and white world that he's from. So, but I enjoyed it. I don't think it was my favorite so far.
Do you have one?
Well,
probably Minutemen. One of the
so far Minutemen. You have, well, next week's issue, which because we're late on this episode, I've already read next week's issue of Dr. Manhattan, and I absolutely loved that book.
Oh, really?
Absolutely loved it.
What do you think? You think I'm going to like it?
I don't know if you're going to like it or not. I'm not sure. I loved it.
I hope that I detest it, and I hope you like it, just so that we have a flip flop, you know.
Always kind of right. No, I really enjoyed it, but I could see people not enjoying it at all. Like it's the right kind of book for me. But
oh, Adam Hughes did the art on that. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, Adam Hughes did the art. It looks fantastic. And it was. It was funny because I went into it kind of like going, oh, man, Straczynski again, because you know how I feel about his Night Owl so far.
Oh, yeah.
Not crazy about it. So I was like, oh, I'm not sure. And then I started reading it. I'm like, yeah, this isn't, you know, it's kind of looking like the same thing. And then it was like, bam, oh, wait a minute. Totally cool. Like, by the end of it, I was like blown away and going, oh, man, that was good. That was really good. And I went back and read it again. So I very much enjoyed that, and I was surprised by it.
I can't wait to see what it is that takes the Sal skirt and flips it.
Yeah, skirt. Wait, what? I don't know what you're talking about there, buddy.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you like though.
Yeah. So, but back to this issue, I did enjoy it. It's a straightforward Rorschach story. I mean, at this point, you know, he touches on some of the, you know, underlying issues with Rorschach very briefly in this book. But mostly it's just like him going out and fighting crime and what he was doing in 1977. Now we'll see if it ends up tying into a bigger piece of Watchmen or, you know, gives us some deeper understanding of Rorschach. But I don't
My
know,
hope
you know,
is that it just deals with this. It's a vengeance tale. It's 1970s for Pete's sake. It's come on, give us a
I got no problem
Charles
with that.
Bronson action on these hoodlums.
Absolutely, I got no problem with that. And to be honest, with a character like Rorschach, I mean, as we were talking about earlier, you know, he's a straightforward kind of this is what I am kind of character. So if we get a straightforward sort of this is a Rorschach story, I don't see anything wrong with that whatsoever. I mean,
yeah.
And I think Azzarello writes crime as well as anybody. So, you know, I while on one hand I was a little disappointed by it because I'm such a nerd for like delving into the mindset of characters, especially, you know, when it comes to Watchmen. Like, that's what I love about Watchmen is the idea of what makes these people tick. So there was part of me that wanted that in this book, like, what? Okay, let's find out what really makes Rorschach tick. But I also think like this was a perfectly fine story. There's nothing wrong with just going and writing a.
Well, I think that we're getting a lot of that in these other books. After reading this and then looking back at all of those and that decision. I'm like, gosh, you know, I kind of wished we would see more of these just kind of not bland adventures, but well-crafted cases that they're handling. And then remember when I said I wanted to see Night Owl just do his – just maybe wear some of those crazy other costumes that we saw in The Watchmen, you know, in the background. You know, have an adventure with the scuba Night Owl costume or whatever.
Yeah,
I kind of just in that way you can be confident that you're not messing around with Alan Moore's.
Yeah, I think the only problem I have with that is why do it then? Yeah. I mean, then it's just like a cash grab. Then it's just like,
well, I tell you, you what, know, this
you could do that kind of a story with any character. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you could write this story with Batman. There's you know, right now after one issue. There's not really any particular reason this has to be a Rorschach story. You know what I mean?
There could be any character. I think art, I mean, you know, the art and this whole placement of the 70s.
I understand that makes it cool, but...
Are you by the story?
I'm just saying there's no particular reason that this has to be a Rorschach story. Like, why... If that's what you did... If they just went and said... Okay, we're not gonna touch on any of the stuff, you know, that leads up to Watchmen. We're not gonna mess with anything Alan Moore did. We're just gonna tell superhero stories with these characters. Why do it? Then it's just a cash grab. Then it's just like we're going to simply take the popularity of Watchmen and try and make money off of it.
No, I don't agree. I think that they're using Rorschach as a you know, an established character to give you this, you know, the Pale Rider story that they're giving you, this beatdown and then this vengeance thing. And because what we know about Rorschach, it makes it all the richer, I think.
But that's the thing. The story is only interesting at this point because it's Rorschach.
Yeah, but, you know, to hear a lot of different varying writers come at these characters, you know, which are in each other's books. That kind of stuff is never. I mean, I've always been scared. Someone's going to have a wildly different take on something, and I don't know. I'm really pleased with the simpleness of it, and certainly the art. So.
Did you get a, you know, it's funny, I'm going back to Bermejo's art a little bit. I got a feeling at certain points, and especially there were moments of when there were like sound effects and stuff added, that I got a very like John Severin Mad Magazine feel in some ways.
What page?
Well, like when he's first beating up the masturbating drug dealer guy. Like, yeah. when it's that one panel where his fist is pulled back and then he punches the guy and it's the smack in between the two panels.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is very, it looks like a John Severin drawing.
Yeah.
And then if you go, like, later on in the book, where else? Oh, when he goes into the sewer and he runs into the two guys playing dice, and you see the dice rolling, and it's the clack behind it. That, the little shot with the dice, looks very much like a John Severin drawing. Like, and then all the I don't know if it's just the way that he did the lettering for these big sound effects, like the crack and whump and hoof, they all reminded me of, like, Mad Magazine for some strange reason. Like, they looked like... Like Mad Magazine lettering.
I like the...
Or Crazy Magazine. Like, that's...
You mean sound effects?
Yeah, the sound effects. Those... That reminds me...
I like it when they do sound effects behind, like, on the page where... And I can't believe you didn't say anything about the funky fist, where he gets the beat on Rorschach, and Rorschach goes in with a Molotov cocktail, and he punches him. And there's this sound effect behind Rorschach. I really like when they do sound effects behind, things in the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
That fist is weird, though. It's almost...
Well, it's like he's doing a roundhouse and he's turning it to some strange...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little odd. It's a little off.
But I like the fact that they stuck with the same color for the... Sound all the way out. I mean, every sound effect is this same yellow.
The Watchman yellow?
Well, it seems to be a bit saturated.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, like I said,
We got darker yellows. Scratch that.
Oh, you're totally wrong. You're a fool. You're a fool. You're lying to people.
You're a fool.
All right. Well, did you read the pirate backup?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I did.
Tell me what happened, because I didn't.
You're breaking up a little bit. It's got some issues with Skype.
Tell me what happened in it.
All right, I didn't read it. I didn't. I forgot to read it.
Oh, you were lying. Wow. You didn't read it, did you? No, I didn't. I didn't read it. I perused it.
It's a wordy bastard this week.
Yeah, I don't think anything happened. Let's just say nothing really happened in it.
We're going to have to hit pause or something.
Why? I don't care. We don't have to read it. It's not before Watchmen. It's just pirate crap. It's just the pirate crap. All right. I don't know. The main hero guy is now he's on the island and he's sort of unconscious, going in and out of consciousness, and he's thinking about what he has to do. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
He thinks he's dying. He thinks he's dying. This is basically... The art's really cool here, with the way he's bleeding out into the skull design. So there's a lot of flowery talk about, I wish I was dead. Was this hell? Heaven?
All right, we didn't
have blessed.
Listen, we didn't read it. Let's not pretend like we read it. It's okay. We'll just we missed one. That's fine. We'll pick it up next week on that.
No, hang on.
Uh-oh, you're gonna read it right now.
No, I'm almost done. For Pete's sake.
Good Lord, really? All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Appreciate it once again. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Next week we will hopefully be a little quicker in releasing stuff. Schedules have kept us behind, and we keep getting later and later in the week with these, but we're trying to catch back up. Next week is Dr. Manhattan number one by Adam Hughes and J. Michael Straczynski. This episode was sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service. discountcomicbookservice.com or dcbservice.com. Go there, buy your comics, please. As always, you can reach us at www.aroundcomics.com. You can email us at info@aroundcomics.com. You can tweet us at Around Comics. We even have a Facebook page and possibly a Tumblr and every other social marketing thing. My personal Twitter account is at Brian Salazar. That's BrionSalazar. Braxton's personal Twitter account is at Braxton, BraxtoN, with the number 9, Braxton 9. And that's pretty much it. That's it.
And I'd like to say that nothing happened in the Crimson Corsair this week. Absolutely nothing happened.
I told you. I did kind of read it, but I was nothing. Yeah, it was just him sort of babbling on.
Okay.
I think it was a little bit of a filler in that one. Do this for me. Do your homework. Like I said, please feel free to email us. Come to the website. We have a forum there. You can comment on stuff. We'd love to hear back from you guys if you have the time. Do a little. I'm gonna give you guys a little homework assignment on this one. Go look up some Blazing Combat pages by John Severin, and you'll see what I'm talking about with the art and the lettering and how I get the same feeling from that and this book. What else? Like the old.
And also, go look at the Tom Waits album from 1974, The Heart of Saturday Night. The cover was illustrated by Lynn Lascario. And that album cover is actually based on Frank Sinatra's. He based the art on Frank Sinatra's album In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning. You can kind of see that Tom Waits is standing in kind of the same pose or whatever.
Did we discuss the Tom Waits Heath Ledger thing?
No, I hate Tom Waits. So what is it?
There's an interesting video. You can find it online. It's from the 70s, I believe, and it's a very young Tom Waits on an Australian talk show. He's on this talk show in Australia, and. If you watch it and you compare it to Heath Ledger's characterization of the Joker in the Batman movie, the fantastic, you know, Joker that he did, it is amazingly similar. Waits's voice and his demeanor and just his body language is incredible.
I can believe it.
It's incredibly similar to how Ledger played the Joker.
It came out that. Ledger based his portrayal of the Joker on something. I just read it a couple days ago, but he specifically had some inspiration that he used when he was playing the Joker.
Well, if you haven't seen it already, go look up on YouTube. It's like Tom Waits. Just search for like Tom Waits Australia talk show, and you'll find it. And it's pretty amazing. It's interesting to see that. And you think, you know, Ledger was Australian. He grew up in Australia, so I'm sure he probably saw that. And to think that maybe he used that.
That was it. That was the.
It's like the way he sounds is especially.
Hey,
Waits is a weird dude, and he's.
You want to hear my Tom Waits impression?
Sure.
That's all I could do.
That's it. That's
he does that on just about every other song.
You know,
he's just gonna come down. Ooh, ooh.
You know, we're gonna end the episode of the Tom Waits song now, right? That's the way it has to be.
Hey, listen, man. You know, I'm this huge Supremes fan. Can't you play some more Supremes?
I absolutely can, because I am a Supremes fan. I'll be happy to play some more Supremes on a future episode. Listen, there's basically two versions. There's two songs called Heatwave that I'm aware of. One of them is by the Supremes, and the other one was Marilyn Monroe sang it in I think Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, or I don't remember which one. So it was for me to pick from either one.
The band is Heatwave.
Well, you never said that.
Well, who knows what I said? I was speaking.
You said Heatwave. We've been listening to that song, Heatwave. That's what you said. We have it recorded. We can go back and listen to the tape of what you said. So don't blame me for assuming you meant Heatwave.
Well, I was reaching at the time, so I mean, all I could think of was Heatwave. What's the name of the song though?
That you're thinking of? It was something grooving.
Grooveline, baby.
Grooveline by the band called Heatwave.
Yeah, that song right there will get your ass up.
If you're not a song,
you're kind of shy. You know. That song comes on, you are on the dance floor.
But it's a song that I've never, ever heard of, so for you to, you know...
You've heard it.
No, I've never.
You just don't know the name of the song.
No, I've never heard that song in my life.
Did you hear it?
It's a terrible 70s disco song. It's terrible. It's a terrible song.
You are so confused. You're like an old man outside of a nursing home.
You have maybe the worst...
Let me guide you back into the nursing home. Mr. Sal.
You have maybe the worst taste in music I've ever met in a grown man. Possibly. It's Chris Niesman and then you.
Well.
I just have the luck of...
Truckers, I'll give you Chris, but no. I'm all funk, baby. Love the funk.
The funk. All right. That's it. That's another episode. Hopefully we'll be back soon.
We will be back soon.
And thanks again for listening. Adios, motherfuckers.
Goodbye.
When a cab combs a snake, trying to rake in that last night's fare, and a solitary sailor who spends the facts of his life like small change on strangers, pauses inside peacoat pocket for a welcome 25 cents, and the last bent butt from a package of Kents as he dreams of a waitress with Maxwell House eyes, marmalade thighs with scrambled yellow hair, her rhinestone studded moniker says Irene, she wipes the wisps of dishwater blonde from her eyes. And the Texaco bacon burns on. The steel belted attendant with a ringing valve special. Crying, fill her up and check that oil. You know, it could be a distributor and it could be a coil. Early morning final editions on the stands. The town crier's crying there with nickels in his hands. Pigs in a blanket, 69 cents. Eggs roll them over in a package of Kents. Adam and Eve on a log, you can sink them damn straight. Hash browns, you know I can't be late. Cracks out a carpet of diamonds across a cash crop car lot filled with twilight coupe de villes, leaving the town in the keeping of the one who is sweeping. Up the ghost of Saturday.